The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. My buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the program on the other side of the glass so we can keep that whole safe distancing thing going. We welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It's Cinco de Mayo.
And can I
express
what you're about to express, I'm thinking?
What is that?
Offer my congratulations to how many years for you and your wife now?
Anne is listening, and I have promised not to say how
not,
many
not
years.
Not to say how many years. Okay, we'll disregard that. And just wish you both happy anniversary
day. Thank you so much. There's a fun picture that I have posted for my Facebook friends. Actually, anybody can go to it, Bill Buckmaster Facebook page. The Tucson Citizen did a spread on U of A students who are getting ready to graduate. This was back in 1968. There's a kind of a fun picture of Anne and I together from the Tucson Citizen archives. And I'm putting this big photo of Anne up there, and the caption was, "That's my girl." So, Anne, happy anniversary to the lovely, talented, and soulmate for sure, Anne Buckmaster. We are
now, the fact that you were married May 5th, and it is Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
Is there a connection there? Is there a story there?
No, it just happened that May 5th was a Saturday, and that's the day we decided to get married in the early 70s, I will say
that. It was the day of the week, not the month.
No, so those trying to say, well, oh my gosh, 1968, they've been like married a long time. No, that was when we had kind of like we're dating, and that went on for quite a few years. So anyway, it's a big day for the Buckmaster family and the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Terry Bracey. Once a month, we bring Terry onto the program. We're always delighted to have Terry. He's the Buckmaster Show contributor from Washington. Terry has enjoyed a long and distinguished career, beginning as a key aide to Congressman Morris K. Udall. Terry went on to serve under four presidents of both parties. He's the senior partner in the respected government affairs firm of Bracey, Tucker, Brown, and Valenzano, which represents the city of Tucson and Pima Community College. Terry, how are you? I hope you are staying safe.
I'm more safe than I want to be. Yes. I've been inside a long time, Bill. I know, but we have to do this. Let me add my happy anniversary to you and Anne.
Thank you.
What a great couple, huh? What a great couple.
Thank you very much. You do get out to hit some golf balls on occasion, don't you?
I did this morning. I went out to the golf range and got, about 20 yards away from anybody and hit a couple hundred golf balls. it's a very healthy thing to do.
Yeah, it's therapeutic.
But listen, I wanted to start, Bill, but I'm just really happy to see what the leadership in Tucson is doing during this terrible, terrible challenge we have ahead of us. Do you realize that the mayor and council have brought in $140 million in relief so far that the mayor has organized a terrific team. Our firm here, Tracy Tucker, is on it, but a terrific team, and they have been right in the front end of everybody getting help because they knew how to do it, and they just did it. And so I just think they've had terrific leadership, and I want to take off my hat to them.
Well, and congratulations, too, Terry, because your firm is playing a big role in that, in getting that money that is so needed at this time with, I'll tell you, cities and counties, states, all desperately looking for federal dollars, right?
Well, yeah, we're part of a team, but the mayor's been the leader, and all credit to her.
Terry, tell us a bit about, I've been enjoying these op-eds that you've been doing on a pretty regular basis for the Arizona Daily Star. What's the one that you are working on right now? Can you give us a preview?
Well, I was, yes, and I was talking to Sarah Gasson about possibly writing on this subject, and it's something that's worried me for a long time. We've talked about it before, but it's the fact that our democracy is really getting more and more fragile. And, you know, it's kind of on tilt. The founders framed it so you had three co-equal branches as a guard against, you know, our autocracy that they left in Europe. This formulation, though, we have to remind ourselves, was designed by landowners in 244 years ago, I guess, when the world moved way more slowly.
Yeah, but look at the rise in presidential power right now. It just keeps going into the stratosphere, Terry Bracey.
Well, and that's the problem. And scholars debate when this began. Bill, but I think the big change began with Franklin Roosevelt, who had to guide us through the infamous Great Depression of the 30s and then World War II, which again gave birth to the kind of nuclear weapons capable of destroying the planet. He was really the first president to fully employ the power of the United States on both economic and military terms.
You know, I am always amazed that many young people do not know about FDR's Manhattan Project, which created the atomic bomb, which ended the Second World War.
Well, I am too. It's a big deal. It was his decision that his successor, Harry Truman, obviously carried out on the bomb. But I'm even more surprised that our students, that so few Americans really know about the Public Works Administration, which actually put millions of unemployed Americans on the public payroll. And you can drive up to northern Arizona and see what it produced, including Hoover Dam. Go over to Los Angeles and take a look at the Rose Bowl. All those were built by the Work Projects Administration. And really, that helped save us from the Great Depression. It really wasn't the private sector, but our federal government, and I think only the federal government can do this, handle this crisis today, if any of us can.
You know, and you've been arguing that from FDR forward, every president has continued to assume greater powers.
Yeah, I do argue that, and it's obvious to me and everyone else when you think about it. In many ways, the speed of decision-making has forced it on them, on presidents. I think, for example, the Cuban Missile Crisis in our young years, and thank God John F. Kennedy was president. He was an excellent politician and leader, and we don't know what might have happened with somebody else there. But the problem goes even deeper than this, I think, and it's a lack of compromise, Bill. Don't you think so?
I definitely think so, and I think back to your friend, Morris K. Udall, and how he worked both sides of the aisle and really was a master at compromise. And I think we've seen almost a total lack of that, Terry.
Well, absolutely. Mo was absolutely the model of what you want in a public servant. Would have been a great president. Came close to getting it, but not quite there. You know, as early as the Federalist Papers, the founders concluded that the biggest need for our system, for it to succeed, was compromise. And the whole thing was built with that in mind. But today's politics don't reward compromise or unity. The weak courts that we have left presidential races completely unprotected from corporate and foreign money, which unloads by the billions. So compromise, you know, is not the kind of thing that raises that money. Candidates really need conflict and controversy and anger to fill the campaign coffers. That's how they raise all the money. You know, Bill, just on the subject of how things have changed, I once visited a powerful senator who told his mayor, who was with me, or I was really with the mayor, that he could be of no help. His job was as a leader of the party that didn't win was to destroy President Obama. That's the way he thought. No consideration of compromise on the nation's health care, on entitlements, on defense, on the things that the people really needed. And really, it's money, the money that needed to be raised, they thought, to defeat him, which they didn't do. But, you know, it just meant that President Obama wouldn't go to the Congress. He'd just rule by himself on executive order. So I think, Bill, our democracy, our American democracy, just isn't working.
Terry, going to have to wrap it up, but I know there is one thing that you feel very strongly about, and that would be a new amendment to the Constitution to control campaign spending, correct?
It's the only thing that can save our system now. It really is. Public financing of election campaigns.
All right, Terry, thank you so much. Stay safe, okay?
Yeah, you too.
All right.
One of my friends in Tucson.
I will. Terry Bracey, our Washington contributor. And Richard, who was waiting on the line there, Richard, I'm sorry, but I ran completely out of time. Tom, do you want to still try to put Richard on? Is he still with us? Go ahead, Richard. Hey, Richard. Oh, lost him. Anyway, Mona's Danish Bakery is getting excited, like most of the restaurants, Tom Fairbanks. Everybody's getting excited because a date now has been given for when restaurants can do some limited in-restaurant dining. And Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, is looking forward to Monday. They will have limited in-bakery dining, and of course they have the patio dining. So check it out if you're in the vicinity of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's opens at 6:30 in the morning, and they are open until 2. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com, the number 579-1959. You can stop by right now, walk in and get your bakery goods, order your lunch, no problem. So Mona's getting excited about the limited in-bakery dining that will be coming along when restaurants reopen in Arizona. That's coming up on Monday. All right, Shelley Fishman is coming up next on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
During the coronavirus crisis, Vero Amore restaurants in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowlands One and Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana are still open for takeout and home delivery. You can still enjoy all your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza. They're all available for takeout and home delivery. More at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
It's easy being green. Promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining. Wait a minute! You can't ban mining! Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
during the coronavirus crisis, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is open for one-on-one appointments only by calling 795-8226 to arrange a time with Moe or Corinne. No interruptions and no other customers. Moe will even arrange a drop-off at the store's front door and coordinate a virtual design session. Moe's Gallery, Fort Lowell and Dodge, 795-8226 and moesgallery.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
And this is Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
Matt, did you hear that Travel and Leisure magazine just ranked the Douro Valley as a top 50 spot for world travel?
Yes, so how about Portugal and Spain for my next culinary and cocktail cruise?
Let's do it on the Douro River aboard the new Amadouro ship from Ama Waterways.
I'll need a chef's table dinner, winery tours, and other private excursions.
Matt, consider it done.
Thanks, Ryan. Portugal and Spain, here we come. Go to bvtravel.com to learn more.
What say we contact Shelley Fishman right now on the telephone? Hello, Shelley.
Hey, Bill. Congratulations.
Yes. Big day for the Buckmasters.
Yeah. How can you have met your your wife in 1968 when you weren't born until, what, 80, 82?
Actually, yeah. How did that happen?
That's kind of
a quirk of nature.
There you go.
So, we heard Terry Bracey talking about FDR and the Public Works Administration Project, and I think, and I know you feel probably the same way, that it might be time to take another look at, with our very hard times, we're facing some kind of a service corps for this country.
I think that we're seeing more and more governors and other people in the public arena talk seriously about the need to do some sort of public service corps in order to implement public works projects, implement infrastructure projects, and get people working again, especially when cash is going to be tight for probably the next year as corporations and companies, especially small businesses, try to pull out of these 2 or 3 or 4, maybe 5 or 6 month pullback in their businesses. So this is one way that the government can get involved in a constructive way and not only accomplish what needs to be accomplished in terms of public service and also infrastructure projects, but get people working again and get them working again in a way that the public policy toward social distancing and being safe, all of that can oversee that in a way that is probably harder to do if you did it entirely in the public sector. So Terry's mind and my mind along this are really going in the same direction.
I want to talk a little bit about these scam artists who never seem to miss an opportunity, and they're all over this pandemic, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. We talked about it in some detail last week because it's important. What's happening is people are trying to take advantage of people's fears and their feelings of loneliness and depression, being alone. And so what you're seeing coming across in your email and coming across even on television ads are a bunch of scams that people are probably more likely to fall into under the conditions of kind of staying at home and having nothing, you know, more constructive to do than watch public media. And as a result, what we're seeing is that state governments are beginning to catch on that they have a responsibility to alert the public, to warn the public about these scams, and to help people who may have fallen for one or about to fall for one to really think it through before they get involved. And there was an article in today's Daily Star, actually, by Joshua Corgiulo, that talks about what the watchdogs in Phoenix are doing to alert people to scams, specifically scams related to COVID-19. But as we know, those aren't the only scams around. Those are some of the most dangerous. I mean, I hate to say this because it's just so impossible for me to conceive of somebody actually drinking bleach. But people drink bleach.
Mm. That is horrible. Shelley, can you take a quick call? Chuck,
sure.
Chuck would like to ask your opinion on something, and I want to get him on the air with you. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hey, Chuck.
Hello, Shelley. Shelley, yesterday the federal government, I don't know if it was the Treasury Department or not, said that they're going to need to borrow $3 trillion to cover the debt. What do you think about that?
Well, I think the number is probably smaller than the actual number is going to turn out to be. We were already in the area of about a $2 trillion deficit, and now we're passing more and more deficit-inducing bills. Tax revenues are way down. The ability to recover some of that money is through collecting and retiring debt becomes harder and harder. So I think it's absolutely clear that this government is going to get into a range of public debt that we haven't seen since the end of World War II as a percentage of GDP. And then the question is, well, does that matter?
Where are they going to borrow this money from?
Well, there's several ways of borrowing the money. There's several ways, essentially, of producing that money. One is to sell bonds, to sell government bonds and T-bills and all of that. And there's still a very active market, even at these very, very low interest rates, for U.S. bonds because they're considered absolutely safe. So as the world economy suffers through periods like this of tremendous uncertainty, dollars tend to flow to the U.S. To buy dollar-denominated bonds. That's one thing. The other thing, keep in mind, the states can't do this, the cities can't do this, but the federal government can print money. It just can. Now, there's lots of ways of doing it that kind of put a veil over it so that you don't necessarily know that they're just printing bucks, but that's what they're doing. And what we've seen over the last 20 years is all the gloom and doom predictions about that causing tremendous inflation, such as what we saw in Germany in the 1920s. That just hasn't happened. So economists are wondering, well, you know, why hasn't printing all this money, going into all this deficit spending, why hasn't it caused inflation? And I will be perfectly honest with you, Chuck, nobody quite knows, but there's a bunch of theories about it, and people are seriously thinking that we have a bunch of ways to go before we hit a point of criticality in terms of our ability to print money and spend the money that we need to as a government to get us out of this trouble. And I know that flies in the face of conventional economics, but that's what's happening.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Chuck, for bringing that up.
Yeah.
Shelley, we've only got about 2 minutes. Do you want to talk a little bit about market volatility?
Well, you know, and this is something that we see on a day-to-day basis. What we're seeing in the market is investor optimism keeps on creeping in and bringing things back from the bottom. And then 2 days later, there's a burp. We hear another number. Unemployment number goes up, or we had just last week the GDP number for the first quarter was, you know, down 5% or dear, you know, darn near 5%, and the markets react that way. So today is Tuesday. On Friday, markets were up. Yesterday they were down. Today they're up again. That volatility would be alarming in a normal economic surround. But right now, we don't have anything normal. So having 30 million people unemployed is horrible, but it's not the kind of situation that you would get under a normal circumstance. And so you look at these statistics that under, again, normal circumstances would create market panic, And instead of panicking, the market is saying, well, okay, that's a bad day, let's go down a little bit. That's a good day, let's go up a little bit. And what we see is the center at around 23,000, which quite frankly is up, what, almost 5,000 from the lows a couple of weeks ago, and down about 5,000 from the highs of a couple of weeks ago. So we've kind of hit a midpoint right now, and we can expect, I think we can expect this is going to go up and down. I heard, we didn't hear it on the news at noon, but the U.S. has now passed 70,000 deaths. It came out just about an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, I think
so
they did.
We haven't seen the worst of this yet.
All right.
And with some of the states relaxing the restrictions on people, I believe we're going to see more. And so the market is going to continue this volatile behavior. And for most investors, they need to ignore it.
All right. Good remarks today. Thank you very much, Shelley. Stay safe. Talk to you in a week.
You too, Bill.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. More and more people are turning to gardening. They've got time on their hands, and that's good news for Green Things, 3384 East River Road. And they have all of your, they've got 13 acres of amazing plants, trees, annuals, and more. They're open daily, and doing very well. They've got the consultation you need if you want to grow something, and I'm sure that's why you're over there at Green Things. They can give you terrific advice on how to do it. And it's greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Let's welcome now Dr. Ray Woosley for our Your Meds segment. Dr. Woosley is the former UA College of Medicine Dean, founder and now president emeritus of the Tucson-based Critical Path Institute known as CPATH. Dr. Woosley's latest creation is Credible Meds, one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicine. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from 180 countries. I would assume, Dr. Woosley, that number has been going up in light of the times we are facing. CredibleMeds.org is the website. Ray, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you, Bill. And yes, the traffic has doubled in the last couple of weeks.
Wow.
As you can imagine.
Dr. Woosley, I want to talk about the COVID-19 therapeutics. These keep changing, seems like daily. Give us kind of an overview, what's in, what's out of favor right now.
Well, as you were talking about earlier, bleach is out, in case anybody's wondering. Should never have even been on our vocabulary, frankly.
Nope.
But there were some early trials from France and China suggesting that a couple of antimalarial drugs, hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine, might be effective, but they were really poorly controlled trials. And just in the last couple of weeks, it's changed dramatically. They were being used. There were millions of pills being stockpiled and hoarded, and people taking it to prevent COVID, which there was absolutely no data to support that. But the FDA started seeing reports and looking at the data and actually sent out a warning of the cardiac toxicity, which we talked about last time we were on the air. That's the kind of toxicity that the Credible Meds website was created to prevent. So we've been all over this and following it closely. The reports now are coming out of deaths, lack of benefit, harm being caused without any evidence of helping people. So many hospitals have stopped allowing doctors to use it. And it's still being used by some people, I'm sure, but everybody is being discouraged to use it unless it's in a clinical trial where it might be found to have some benefit. But right now, it's known for its toxicity, especially when it's combined, as it often was, with azithromycin, the commonly taken antibiotic. And again, that was one of the suggestions from the French papers, but again, that's not bearing out, and it's high doses or doses with the azithromycin of those drugs are especially dangerous.
Let's talk about Gilead's treatment, which is giving some hope that perhaps this can be a therapeutic that would shorten people's hospital stays. Ray Woosley, I'm curious, what's your take on this?
Well, when Tony Fauci gets excited, it's awfully hard not to believe that there's something there. But, you know, this trial hasn't been released. It's still only been looked at by people at the NIH. We don't have a scientific paper to review. We don't have the audit of the study. So I think it's important. It could be a very important step, but you've got to remember, this remdesivir was developed for Ebola. Turned out it didn't work. There was one study in China in which it didn't have any benefit. And now there's this study that was stopped early because the people monitoring the trial felt that it was shortening the length of an illness. It hasn't been found to prove death, which was the original intent of the study, but it was found to shorten the length of hospitalization and illness by about 3 or 4 days, which 30% or so. So that's significant. And if it is true that it is producing a benefit, Dr. Fauci's excitement goes back to the experience with HIV/AIDS, where AZT was found to have some benefit. That allowed you to move more quickly to combine it with other drugs, which is a logic that for most antivirals, and in fact, even bacterial infections, often you need combinations of drugs. You know, in HIV now, people are taking four drugs at a time, and it's life-saving. But one of the caveats here is that we should look at this with enthusiasm, but even with HIV, it's still, after AZT was found, it took another 4 years to really find effective drug therapy. So it's good news, but it's not time to celebrate yet.
It's given intravenously and not a pill form, correct?
Right. It's only available right now, and Gilead is saying that they've got enough medicine to treat about 140,000, and that is IV, and that's going to be sent out and distributed around the country and actually around the world, so all of it won't come to the U.S. But that's a fairly small amount of medication for the need. It is being tested for use by intramuscular injection, which would facilitate administration some, but that's going to take some time. And it's also being tested for intranasal administration. But again, that will probably take a lot of time.
Boy, many people so excited about what's going on with Oxford University and the vaccine they are developing. I saw the gentleman who from Oxford, he was on Meet the Press on Sunday saying he's very optimistic about this, and he says several million vials could be produced of this vaccine to begin with in September. Do you share some of that enthusiasm?
Well, you know, I don't want to be totally negative on everything, but I think, you know, we've been trying to get a good vaccine for HIV and for a couple of decades and can't do it. Viruses are very difficult to treat. Sometimes we have a home run like measles and things like that, but I think it's encouraging. I think the fact that the world is working on it with the best technology we've ever had, I think we will be able to accelerate somewhat. And I think the fact that there are companies, we're not just swinging on one or two pitches, we're actually going after 8 or 9 of these vaccines, and we're making them in bulk in case they do turn out to be effective. So I'm encouraged by that. I think the odds are we will have a vaccine. How quickly? It's awfully difficult to predict. And as Yogi Berra said, prediction of the future are very difficult.
Are you concerned about mutations?
I am. I'm also concerned about some of the reports, the very sketchy anecdotal reports that say that some people may be able to be reinfected. We don't understand the immunity, if it exists. We know people get better, and so there is something in the body that's allowing them to beat back the illness. But how long that is in action and how long it'll keep the illness out of your body is something yet to be determined.
We're still learning so much, aren't we, day by day?
We are. We are. And I think one of the things, because some of these drugs like hydroxychloroquine are still being used, Credible Meds released a tool on the Internet for doctors, nurses, and pharmacists to use. So if any are listening, I hope they'll go to the website that we created for this so they can scan the drugs that they're using or seeing be used and use them more safely. This is called MedSafetyScan.org, MedSafetyScan.org. And it's available free for any healthcare provider to use to monitor the medications that are being used for COVID.
All right. Dr. Ray Woosley, please stay safe. All the best to you.
Thank you, and congratulations to you and Ann, two lovely people.
Thank
enjoying
you.
A lovely day, I hope.
Thank you very much, Ray Woosley. And Ray hosts our Your Med segment here on The Buckmaster Show. Coming up now on 12:46 already on the Cinco de Mayo, and 10:30, the voice trusted source for local news talk in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio, Margaret Regan, the longtime arts reporter for the Tucson Weekly. My goodness, COVID-19 has just decimated kind of the whole arts industry. We'll talk to Margaret after this.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com. During this coronavirus crisis, Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, is still open for takeout and home delivery only. You can get all of your favorite Noble Hops menu offerings. Come pick them up, or they'll bring them to you. So check out Noble Hops on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and online at noblehopspub.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. If you're thinking about that bucket list in your mind of where you'd like to go when things open up, I hope you'll consider Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. They're ready to welcome you with open arms when you feel it is safe to travel again. Their website is southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find a listing of great places to stay and so many recreation opportunities, outdoors, most of them, which is very much in line with social distancing. And you can get plenty of that in the Gila National Wilderness. There's plenty of room there. southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now the Buckmaster Arts contributor, Margaret Regan. Margaret has been writing about the arts for the Tucson Weekly since 1990. She's the author of two prize-winning books on immigration. She's part of the Regan clan, of which the Mr. Buckmaster here has a connection. My mother's name was Regan and spelled the same as Margaret. So somewhere there we're kin, Margaret.
Well, yes, we are. And I should congratulate you today. It's your wedding anniversary, right?
Big wedding anniversary today. A relationship born in the late 60s, the wild 60s. How are you hanging in there? We gave you the month off last month because literally the art scene just shut down.
Yeah.
Is there any encouragement coming along here concerning the arts?
Yeah, I can't say any encouragement right now. I haven't even written anything for the weekly in, 6 weeks.
Wow.
So little's been going on. But I am working on a story about, okay, what's happening with the museums. So I've been talking to the directors of different museums in town. And, I've got a quote from Jerry Michalacek, if I never get his name right. He's the CEO of Tucson Museum of Art, And a great quote from him, but not a happy one. He says, "The Tucson cultural leaders have all been talking, and we are all getting hard hit."
Why?
So they're all closed. And I was just wondering, you know, yesterday Governor Ducey announced some softening of the rules about retail stores, and I'm thinking possibly that's going to affect the galleries. You know, by Friday they're allowed to open retail, keeping people 6 feet apart.
Margaret, I think that will impact. In fact, I know one of my great sponsors, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, will be open to the public starting Friday.
Oh, okay.
So I think we can say galleries will be okay to open. I don't know about museums. I wish that they would allow folks to go to museums, because I don't see any big problem with, like, if you were to go to TMA, you could do social distancing there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I guess they'll think about these things, you know, now that we've gotten that ruling of yesterday. So, I'll be calling you. That's the thing about doing a story like this. You know, I've talked to everybody, but then things keep changing. So then I have to call back and find out. I think they're nervous. You know, I know that they do have some staff, for example, at TMA, but only a few, and they're keeping far apart from each other. I mean, the shows are still up. One of the things that's really a shame about all this is, you know, the artwork that's on the walls that nobody can see.
Yeah.
They have a show called Southwest Rising, which I didn't get to see. It opened in late February. And the sad part is Julie Saucy, who's the main curator there, she has been working on this book. She had worked on this book for 4.5 years. Got the book published, and it was so wonderful for her, and she's so great. You know, she's been working at the museum for years.
Sure.
The museum agreed to have a show based on her book.
Good.
So it was one of the great moments of her life, publishing the book and this beautiful show opening up, and then it was only open for maybe 10 days. And, you know, so, but the good news is you could buy the book. I mean, a lot of the museums are looking at online activities and things, and I think there's a limit to that. That people, I know for myself,
yes.
I don't really feel like even more getting on the internet. You know.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I will say, from a personal point of view, I renewed my membership, membership to the Tucson Museum of Art, even though, of course, they are closed. But I did it because I figured, boy, if they ever needed the help right now.
Yeah.
This is it. So that's why I did that.
Yeah, well, that's really great. And I'm sure a lot of these places are really hoping. I know the little gallery, Raíces Taller, which is a wonderful place, and it's been there like 18 years over at 6th and 6th, and they do a lot of good local shows. And they're begging for money. I mean, they've never had any money, let's face it. But, you know, they do have rent to pay. And yeah, it's just it's a really good time to donate. You know, Jeremy at the Tucson Museum of Art says they are really not funded by the city or the county.
Mm.
He said their money basically comes in from donations, you know, fundraising among wealthier people. But, you know, those wealthier people that are often so generous have all been hit with stock market losses. And who knows if they're going to be inclined to be giving money for art museums during this time.
So So we've got Center for Creative Photography. They've been closed since mid-March.
Yeah.
University of Arizona Museum of Art, again, closed. Is the thinking to keep the shows up as long as possible so that when folks are able to go in, they'll be able to see the shows?
Yeah, and it kind of gives them a break in a sort of a way. At Center for Creative Photography, they have two shows up right now. One was called The Qualities of Light, an interesting show about a pioneering photo gallery in New York in the 70s. And it was run by Harold Jones, who later was the first director of the Center for Creative Photography. So that's really interesting. It's about when photography was not really accepted yet as an art form.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a second one by Rebecca Sent, the curator there, about Ansel Adams, early work.
Wow.
And she, too, has written a book. It's interesting. I really want to write about this. Two curators, two museums, have both written books at the same time, and each book is backed up by an exhibition at the museum.
That no one can see.
That no one can see. But you could buy the book.
Yes, yes.
And it is a beautiful book. Rebecca's, I have a copy of it because I'm hoping to write about it. But yes, Anne Beckenridge Barrett, who's the director there, said yes, they will, you know, at least they don't have to do all that work whenever, when and if they open. I guess I shouldn't say if.
They will open, yeah.
Those shows will still be up on the wall. And the same thing at the University of Arizona Museum of Art. They said, yeah, they'll keep up their current shows too. But another of those many sad things that have happened, every spring, the University of Arizona Museum of Art does a big show for the students who have just gotten their master's in fine arts, their MFA. And it's a really big deal to those students because they're going out into the world now as professional artists. It's a very important exhibition for them. And last year, the shows are usually pretty great. Those are very talented young people. And last year, one of the men, he did this beautiful, amazing painting, and the Tucson Museum of Art bought a painting, and he was just coming out of graduate school.
Wow, very nice.
So it's really important for their careers and their opportunity. Well, guess what? You know, the show was canceled. So they're feeling really bad. The acting director of the place, Jill McCleary, says she's trying to figure out a way that they could do a digital show. And I know that the U of A over at Joseph Gross Gallery across the way from the museum, that's what they did for the Bachelor of Fine Arts students, the younger ones.
All right.
You know, so they have a virtual show up.
Maybe we're going to have to quickly run here, but Margaret, maybe we'll have better news when we talk with you in early June. I hope so,
Bill. We really need some good news these days, don't we?
Thank you very much, Margaret. Okay. Stay safe, okay?
Okay, you too. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Margaret Regan with us, talking about the limits that the art scene having to shutter. Hopefully they'll get the galleries. They're going to be opening up on Friday, and then hopefully the museums will be, folks can go to the, because it would give some folks something to do, Tom Fairbanks.
Well, I hope there's a floral shop open for you so that you can take something home to Anne.
Well, maybe one of the grocery stores. I'll put my mask on and get some flowers there. Anyway, that's going to do it. I'm Bill Buckmaster on behalf of Tom Fairbanks. Have a great afternoon.